welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Folks, it's now or never. Either we get the job done, because nobody's going to do it for us. And as a matter of fact, I will tell you that we need to pray, but praying won't do it alone. You have to get up off your knees and you actually have to act. It's kind of like that meme that most people have seen in social media that says, praying for, a hole doesn't mean that God's going to dig that hole. You still have to get up and pick up that shovel and dig the hole. And so we all have work to do. And with that, let me just go through the obligatories. We're going to get into some more details. I'm going to get back to this concept of natural law, or the laws of nature and nature's God, which basically has been relabeled as natural law. That's pretty much what we call natural law, or that's the derivative. The term natural law has kind of derived from that. Anyway, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Do not forget that we are going to be covering really critical data for you. We're putting the pieces together, such as natural law. We'll give you updates if there's any updates. We do need you to get engaged. It's as simple as that. We need people to start calling your state legislators, start demanding that they actually take action. And as a matter of fact, we especially need you to be very active in these upcoming races, these congressional races, these state legislative races. And let me point out something to you. I think as I was looking and talking with the chair of the Missouri Constitution Party, there are six, count them, six seats that are empty that went unchallenged and nobody ran to be a local representative for those chairs. And that's a sad indictment. We don't want to just put a body in those chairs. That's the problem we've got right now. We just have bodies. We have bodies that are susceptible to avarice and have been basically perverted by lobbyists and so forth in aggrandizing themselves in their public service. In other words, oh, you can do this and we can give you. This is why they believe they're better than us. They're only protected, they're above the law in most cases only when they're in session, but they're not above the law for any type of felony or any type of, treason or anything else in their behavior. Yeah, they don't get a speeding ticket if they're in session. That's kind of cool, especially if you like to drive fast. But we have to start focusing, and actually you need to look at when your primaries are. Don't let GR have to do this for you. You need to go into your state, find out when your primaries are. When are the filings? Is there a possibility that you can run for your state legislator? Don't run for Congress. What we want to do is we just want to make sure Congress is, doing damage control, that we at least get people in there that are constitutional, but they're not going to be able to change the swamp. If you haven't and you don't understand that term, the swamp, watch the movie The Swamp on Reclaiming the Republic. You'll find it on the important information or the important links page. Let me see here. Let me make sure that that's the precise link that I'm talking about. Yep, it's important info. Just click on that button and it'll take you to, right at the very top, the important links, and you'll see The Swamp as the link, and you just click on that. And just watch that movie if you haven't seen it. And as I found out, that there's a special, I guess this is only a small portion of it, but there is like an hour of this, at least I was told, on HBO. Now, I don't know if HBO has the rights. I've been asked about that, and I don't know. All I know is I'm not charging for this, and I'm just posting it for your information. This was on YouTube, and it was taken down on the Northwest Grassroots website. And I don't think it was taken down because of copyrights. I think it was just taken down because they don't want people to know this type of information. And you'll also find other information regarding how Congress votes and so forth by Peter Schweitzer. Anyway, let me move on. Fortitude Financial Coaching is the place you can go to get a good financial coach in helping you become disciplined in taking control of your finances. ConstitutionEducation.us is a great place to go to start learning about the Constitution, just basic details on the Constitution. That's where you can go. TimberNation.com is where you can go to get good quality hardwood furnishings. Most people need furniture. Check it out. And as a matter of fact, you'll probably find that what you pay, I mean, what I paid for this desk in contrast to what I paid for the other desk may have some drawers, but it's a much smaller desktop. It's not nearly as beautiful, and it's not nearly as strong. And I've only had that for a few years, and it's all the finish on it, because it looks like it's wood, but it's not. The finish has been chipping, so you get these little white spots, and I have no idea what it's really made of. I don't even think it's wood. It may be a synthetic type of wood material that they use for molding, because I remember when we bought some other furniture, and we got this furniture, and it was expensive. I believe we bought it while Sears was still around, when Sears was providing furniture. They used to provide really good furniture, but not anymore. And this bed that we got, the feet and so forth, it actually was like a synthetic fiber plastic molding that was painted to look like wood, look like the rest of the bed. Anyway, if you want good quality furniture, TimberNation.com. Radio dust covers. Ladies, if your husband has nice audio equipment, if he has nice ham radio, if he's into expensive electronics, go reach out to RadioDustCovers.com. Valentine's Day is coming up. Father's Day is coming up. And these are custom-made things, so you need to make sure you have lead time with both Timber Nation and Radio Dust Covers. They can't just get it to you tomorrow. They don't have the stock or inventory. They make it for you. Add Local is where you can go and get your ISP, your infrastructure service provider type of support. They don't provide you with your internet, but they will provide you with your business domain and the things that you will need, and it'll be a lot cheaper than going to your internet service provider or your infrastructure service provider. Let me just kind of say this, because I talk a lot about monkeys and the organ grinders of conservative entertainers and so forth, and whether they are the progressive monkeys or whether they're conservative monkeys. Monkeys are simply thieves. All they do is they rob you of what little precious time we have left. They rob us of what little precious time. So when we engage in, you know, what seems to be, you know, very informative, wow, you know, Bill O'Reilly, that's really informative, or Glenn Beck, you will never get the solution from those types, well, I'll just call them monkeys. And as a matter of fact, there's another context that you can put this into. You can put this into evangelicalism, because as I look at what we do today, we really, especially conservatives, even on the progressive side, there are literally two different evangelicalism doctrines. There's the evil doctrine and there's the good doctrine, right? The one that's based on good morals and God, and the other one is based on, you know, lack of morals and or Satan and so forth. And so when you look at what we're seeing, the monkeys, it's kind of like an evangelicalism. It's a new age of this. Instead of people seeking God, you know, to figure out what's going on, especially with when it comes to government, more and more people are turning to these television evangelicals, you know, preaching what you have to do. And I, because I fit into that category. There's no doubt that I am preaching. There's no doubt that I'm telling you, and I am pointing out. I'm reading what I call the scriptures of government for American government. For our government, I am reading specifically the founding documents. And so when you put it into that context, it makes it a little bit easier for you to go, wow, okay, so who's giving you the truth? When we look at conservative evangelicalism, that is basically one who speaks to principal ideas, and yet they all fall short of seeing or offering the absolute solution in getting government, because when they don't even really talk about the real problem. They talk about the symptom. Oh, well, look at this critical race theory thing. Look at this, you know, vaccination thing. They're not even talking about the real problem. When the Social Security system actually hits that breaking point, they're going to talk about the breaking point. They're not going to talk about the real problem. They'll never tell you about the real problem. Is it because they don't see it? I don't know. I can't speak for them. But I do believe that they know if they actually talk about the real problem and they start seeing the real problem, then the solution becomes a little bit easier. Well, maybe, because I'll be honest, you really have to reach and find, because most people think, like the Convention of State folks, they really think that that's a solution when it's not. It can't be a solution. Impossible. It can never be a solution. Anyway, we will be right back after this. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so actually, on Friday, if I don't get through all of this by Thursday, then Friday I will get into an update regarding Senator Bayer. I believe that's how the B-A-Y-E-R, so I think it's like the National Pharmaceutical Company. Senator Regina Bayer out of Idaho actually sent me this response, and this is awesome. It's awesome that she's read this, and it's awesome that she's responded, because I truly believe this is the divine hand of providence when I see something like this, because her response was this: I will always support the Electoral College and oppose the national popular vote. Now, when I look at that in context to her reply to my constitutional minutes and so forth, one has to presume why. That's really an out in the left field type of comment regarding the content that I sent her. In other words, she completely misinterpreted what I was saying regarding the Electoral College. And so I see this as, and so I'll give you the details of my response to her and hopefully her re-engagement this coming Friday, possibly. But anyway, back to this concept of evangelicalism. As we start talking, because a lot of people talk about natural law, the law of nature, and God's law, and yet they really don't hit it squarely. It's like you can't talk about the laws of nature and nature's God unless you talk about common law. You have to inject common law as a part of that, because that's what common law is based on, is God's law. Anywho, because it's... and I'll get into this. And as a matter of fact, I'll move forward with the reading. But I do want to say this. So when you really start looking at offering solutions, you know, there is even those planners in government, you know, they're up there swinging and they're striking out. Such as infrastructure planning. Just as one example, infrastructure planning, if one person is really, or if a group of people, if the strategy, if the design, if the demand by the people is to give us a permanent solution for our infrastructure, then can they do that? Well, in some ways, we do recognize that, you know, highways are consumable. Right, as they break down, there's this erosion, just like, you know, granite erodes over time, but it doesn't erode quickly. Now, when we look at our infrastructure, why do we allow such a second-rate infrastructure solution? Because they say it's cheaper. Well, I will tell you, when you really look at where the price or the biggest cost involved in infrastructure, it is labor. When it comes down to laying that highway, the material may be pretty pricey, but the labor is what's really pricey. The engineers and all of the people involved in, you know, standing around watching the people with the shovels, labor is what really kills you. So why would you want to have to do this unless you are looking at trying to make, you know, relevance of your career and your life? We could create, look at the Autobahn. The Autobahn in Germany was created way back when, what, the 40s or something like that? And they haven't had to resurface. And why can't we create a permanent, you know, 3-foot-thick concrete highway system? We can. And then we can actually have, because it gets cold. It may not get as hot in Germany, but it does get hot. I mean, they have their summers. My point is, folks, that we continually allow them to give a second rate, and within a couple of years, our infrastructure has began to become so big and complex with the, you know, all the different highways, because we're becoming more and more productive. We don't have time and we don't have the money and resources for the next 100 years to allow them to continually give us crappy work and crappy roadways. Let's start having the conversation of how to make a good quality permanent road, good quality permanent bridges, so that we don't have to put in inferior products like asphalt for our highway surfaces or thin concrete that will break and crumble over time much quicker. Let's actually start looking at solving the problem, because if we come up with what would be the term convention in engineering, the standard of a superior road, that's what we should be putting in place for our highways and then our main roads and then eventually, you know, the ancillary roads, but, you know, maybe not the private roads. I get that, because private roads change, the infrastructure changes underneath it, so forth and so on. But These highway systems, those should be permanent features that never have to be touched. And yet in California, they're constantly crumbling because the Department of Transportation and the contracts that they lay out there, they deliberately give you an inferior product. So when we look at trying to fix government, we need a permanent solution. And the solution is simple. It actually isn't even a solution. It's called compliance. We need them to comply. This becomes, when you really start looking at it, then all of a sudden they go, wow, he's right. That is the solution. You have to comply. You can't be doing these things you have no authority to do. Now we've hit the nail on the head. It's not about, you know, Social Security is collapsed and we have to figure out. No, you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Now we have to end it and we have to, you know, fix this problem by ending it and then actualizing what we owe everybody and move forward. I don't believe it should be at the expense of everybody in the United States in fixing Social Security that they should not be able to get back how they have unconstitutionally stolen money from us. It is another thing in having to pay other countries who are willingly participants in undermining us. If they didn't know, then shame on them, because it is their responsibility. When you go into a debt contract and loaning money, do you have the authority to do this? Anybody that would have read the Constitution would have been told, no, you don't. Even if we told you and you took our word for it, you're still at fault. You have the responsibility to assure for yourself that this is legitimate debt, and it is not. Therefore, I don't care about other countries. Not that I don't care, but actually, other countries, if they want to maintain autonomy from the United States, that's fine. But any country that wants to actually become a part of this, you know, true liberal society, and I mean classical liberal, then welcome to the campfire. Anywho, let me move forward with what we were reading yesterday. And it's basically, I just got one paragraph to finish, and then I'm going to get into my description and my efforts in trying to help people understand natural law and the laws of nature and nature's God. So again, this is the natural law, the Constitution, and this is just an introduction by this gentleman that wrote this. I told you yesterday, and it's still by him. Anyway, he goes on and says this: most modern commentators agree that the American founders were firm believers in natural law and sought to craft a constitution that would conform to its requirements as they understood them and embody its basic principles for the design of a just political order. The framers of the Constitution sought to create institutions and procedures that would afford respect and protection to those basic rights, or in other words, natural rights, that people possess, not as privileges or opportunities granted by the state, but as principles of natural law, which is the moral law or moral duty of the state to respect and protect. Throughout the 12th century, however, a lively debate that existed regarding the question of whether the Constitution, incorporates natural law in such a way as to make it a source of judicially enforceable, albeit unwritten, constitutional rights and other guarantees. In my remarks this evening, I will discuss two significant moments in this debate: the exchange between majority and dissenting justices in the 1965 Supreme Court case of Griswold v. Connecticut, and second, an important effort by a distinguished constitutional law scholar, the late Edward Corwin of Princeton University, to specify and draw out the implications of the rootedness of American constitutional law in natural law concepts. Now, that is an overview that was kind of provided, and it kind of helps you understand. And the real thing that I wanted to put out was that there was really nothing that was created by our framers or anybody, actually. Nobody has ever really gone out, because what it takes is, it's almost like what King James had to do with the Bible. He had to get his scholars. He had to basically get a collection of priests together. I forget how many it was, like 12 or something like that, 13, maybe 20, and put them in one room and actually canonize, all agree what the Bible is and then what the words are, because some of it was in Greek, some of it was in Latin, and so what they had to do is they had to determine exactly what every scripture was saying, so that way there would be no question as to the usage of words. And believe me, they did not want to start interpreting. They wanted to make sure that they were using the right definition for that word that was being used at that time. Unlike today, when we have all sorts of lingos. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just kind of get through, because this next article, actually this is an extract out of my book, and I'm going to share this with you because I don't want to necessarily, because when I sit down and write, I really put all of my thoughts and put the dates and words and everything together off the top of my head, off of an outline. I don't necessarily formulate and articulate as well as I do when I write. And so forgive me, I'm not trying to sell my book, but what I want to do is I really want to put this into context for you, because understanding natural law is, and the laws of nature and nature's God, is critical. It is critical to understand the foundation that the framers were planted on in creating this one, our form of government, our type of government, and how it operated, as well as the fact, because here they're talking about whether the Constitution gave government the right. I mean, the individual, that person, and as a matter of fact, I think I might still have it open. I don't have it open, so I can't tell you who it was that actually opened that. Actually, I can. Here, it just kind of popped up. And so that was Robert P. George. So Robert P. George, thank you very much. This is Robert P. George,
Not that there's anybody here. I did that myself. So Robert P. George really missed the boat. If you understood what he was saying and what these other men were saying, are these things written in the Constitution where they protect the inalienable rights or not? They don't get the Constitution. This is because they really didn't understand that the Constitution was a very limited. There was no general powers in that Constitution. And I'm telling you, for years and years, there even constitutional scholars truly believe they have general powers, because that is how it was defined by John Marshall. John Marshall basically looked at the Necessary and Proper Clause, and he says the federal government has the ability to determine whatever is necessary and proper, and whatever we do is supreme. This is how they've been ramrodding all of this crap down our throats, because he turned his back on how the Constitution was defined. And every person that's become a public servant has failed to understand. This is why the ratification debates are more than just a treasure. They are the divine clarity of exactly what that Constitution says and what it means in saying that. So, let me just get into this, because I'd like to actually get into some updates regarding Senator Bayer and this little conversation. During the Middle Ages, many historians attest to the fact that natural law was in tandem with God's law. At the end of the 18th century, secular progressives also hijacked natural law, dividing it from God's law and into doctrinal divide for giving credibility to socialism and communism. This is because natural law, as a derivative of God's law, was universally accepted, which again gave leverage to progressives to divorce the connection to God from committing murder, bearing false witness, property rights, and etc. In essence, the Platonists, and I told you, the Platonists, it's another word for communists, or in other words, communists or progressives, were setting up their own oppressive government that would be married to their religion as well. Just like our government was actually based on God's law, now they're trying to create a government that's based on Satan's law, which is antithetical. In essence, okay, no, the end was to bring all back full circle, where the states control everything. This was the fundamental argument. And when I say states, we're talking about government itself. Platonism, not necessarily the republic states. Communists, since Plato, ultimately controlling the means of production and consumption. On the extreme end of controlling consumption is when the state will begin to control birth. The communist countries have already done this today. Consequently, our once enlightened society has dug up horrific practices of eugenics, abortion, and infanticide, which is now done with the use of technology to terminate a birth of an unborn infant without the wrong gender. The penultimate end for the secular progressives is to transition all governments into a centralized state. The ultimate end is to unify all states into a single governing body of the world. This idea has been around a very long time, and to substantiate the resurgence of this idea to the end of the 13th century, the beginning of the 14th century, one only needs to read Dante's De Monarchia. This work, along with other ancient texts, such as Plato's, has been the catalyst for the initial concept of the Illuminati, socialism, communism, and all forms of government that violates individual liberty and sovereignty. I'm going to take a quick break here and basically tell you, first off, Dante, when he wrote this book, The Demarchia, he was actually, because this is also in my book, I tell you this backstory on this, Dante was actually banished from the church and from the host country where he lived. I don't remember where he lived at the time. But he was banished. He was cast out. He was not allowed. And so he had to kind of fend for himself for several years until they allowed him back in because of this book.
this book was not just about a single world government, but it was a single government and a single religion. He felt that all religions must be married together. So he went a step further in Plato than Plato did, because Plato just talked about government and the state. See, they were pretty much secular. They were mythological, and the philosophers were really rejecting the mythology of Greece. They were just really, you know, in essence, godless. And so this is how Plato was able to create this philosophy that wasn't tied to any religion. But the demarchia was. There was a marriage between the state and a single state and a single religion, which really scared the church at the time. I don't know if it scared it because it revealed them, or if they just thought it posed a real threat to what they were trying to do at that point in time. You also have to remember that at this point in time, when Dante was alive, the Roman Catholic Church, or the Rome, had basically, the empire had splintered up. And even though the Pope may have been granting and what we call coronating kings, there was still a beginning of a division between the monarchies of Europe. And so, because obviously there were those who were starting to break away. King George hasn't broken away, but there were differences, and this is how some of these religions, even the Crusades, were a part of this process, because there were certain places that weren't necessarily influenced, like the Netherlands and Sweden, that wasn't influenced by the Crusades. And so Europe was going through this huge transition. And in the midst of all of this, out there in England, in the 13th century, we had the Magna Carta in England and the birth of a new concept of, and we'll get into that because I actually talk about it right here, taking the Enlightenment, so back to the book, taking the Enlightenment era even further. The Magna Carta was a significant catalyst for the Enlightenment era, which began around the 13th century. This is where King John had to proclaim, he was forced to proclaim specific liberties to the people and accepted the people's assertion that his will and laws were not arbitrary. The English governance included the common law system, where precedence in ruling and jurisdiction was established based upon God's law. This governance by British monarchs was the beginning of galvanizing individual liberties to the citizens. These were not absolute liberties, and eventually the people of England revolted in 1688, or the 17th century, and overthrew King James. This was the epoch in Britain for the beginning of a Bill of Rights, which set the stage for significant events in the evolution of Enlightenment that led to Thomas Jefferson and our framers' interpretation of the laws of nature and nature's God. So here, editorializing, because here's something that nobody has said. Mark Levin doesn't say this, and he won't acknowledge this. If you look at the era of Enlightenment, it was the era of Enlightenment and Christianity that created this new paradigm in America, period. You cannot deny this. It was truly this desire to get closer to God and God's doctrines and his laws. And so as we created this society, it was truly a change and a shift in the world, because this epoch that was created by this Bill of Rights was really the catalyst of creating the demand of individual rights of liberty and sovereignty here in America. Moving on, I say this. During the beginning of Enlightenment, scholars read and wrote about natural law. Well, let me just start this paragraph off when we come back. I hope this is helping, but I'm actually going to get into some examples. I name names of, you know, these philosophers and writers of Enlightenment and natural law, but we also give you a really good example. And I think that's what really helps people start putting it natural law and the laws of God and nature. And I'll be right back.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. See, I told you so. Every time I try to squeeze in that, you know, the laws of nature, nature's God, you know, and I know that time is coming. It's just, it was actually impossible for me to get those, what, six words out, laws of nature and nature's God, instead of saying natural law. It's kind of interesting. Natural law has just become a little bit easier, but just the term, creating the term natural law, takes away, even though it may be simpler and it kind of states the same thing, it takes away that last part, nature's God. Okay? That's the just this little underhanded effort that the progressives, you know, oh, well, let's just not call it the laws of nature, nature's God. Let's call it natural law. Well, instantly they've removed God from what we call it now. See my point? And how that was done back in the 19th century, back in the 1800s, when they started, you know, well, let's start creating a name for this, because they got involved. And whether some of these people actually knew what they were doing, because I truly believe that there were people that participated in these processes that set the stage for the progressives to do the evil that they're doing today. You know, like Alexander Hamilton. I don't believe Alexander Hamilton was a participant for Satan in creating certain things. And same thing with John Marshall. But they created the footings that those people used. And so, you know, the likelihood of these men rolling around in their grave is probably very high, because I think that these men were probably good men with this noble intent, but it is their noble intent that created this break in this levee of protection that we had, and now we're being flooded by evil. So anyway, back to what I was saying. During the beginning of Enlightenment, scholars read and wrote about natural law. During the early founders of this philosophy, as listed in the beginning of this section, this included the works of Thomas Aquinas, Francisco Suarez, Richard Hooker, Thomas Hobbes, Hugo Grotius, Samuel von Pufendorf, John Locke. See, if I'm reading it, I can kind of do okay with names. Francis Hutcheson, Jean-Jacques Berlemaque, and Emmerich de Vital, as well as Francis Bacon, William Blackstone, and Baron de Montesquieu. Though they began to discover that Aristotle was wrong about almost all of the scientific laws, his philosophy that emphasized the distinction from nature from man's law, in other words, nature's law and man's law, which was the law of nature, remained consistent where man's laws changed. And that's what they had to do. They had to start moving things to where in America we started creating man's law. Now, and again, I'm going to provide some examples here, but the fact is that this whole principle of consistency, that's even in the Bible. One of the scriptures, and I can't think of off the top of my head, but if you look up consistent or consistency, you'll probably find a scripture in the Holy Bible that basically says you will know because God is constant. He is consistent. He is the same as he was in the beginning as he is today. And so that's how you can tell if it is of God or not. Is it constant and consistent with of old, the Old Testament, New Testament, and today? This is also applied, so moving back into reading mode here, this is also applied to God's law and its consistencies. These pioneers of natural law argued that man possessed a much higher capacity, one that could discern and reason, a consciousness that could not be constrained on a physical plane and was capable of knowing good from evil, thus giving every man a freedom to choose right from wrong. Even societies and cultures that had disparate religious and philosophical ideologies were capable of determining good from evil as it pertained to both culture and to God's law that were biblically based. For example, thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not steal, thus giving man the moral freedom to choose when not subjected to austere oppression or handicapped with mental abnormalities, natural or drug-induced. Over time, these laws took social prominence where men were awakening to the reality of their liberties being constrained or taken. See, that's the problem. We've not awoken that we have lost liberties that are inalienable, that are actually even listed right there in the Constitution, like the right of petition. Government and the courts are not recognizing that right. No, just go out in the streets and protest. And if we like it, you know, we'll let you do it. And if we don't like it, we'll arrest you, like on January 6th. That's tyranny, folks. That is arbitrary law. And if the Constitution guarantees your right to petition government for the redress of grievances, if they don't recognize that, then they are in absolute violation of the Constitution. In essence, these laws were constant and obviously the laws or boundaries that God had provided as a framework of his gospel. An ideology that is in conflict with both natural law and God's law, which is homosexuality. For illustration purposes, the following subsection will provide an example of the conflict of homosexuality in society as a sin and a detriment is provided for consideration. I'll tell you what, I'm sure that those proponents and those who love is love and propose, you know, homosexual marriage, they look at me as a hater. I'm not out here calling. As a matter of fact, I even mentioned this in my book. I'm not calling for them to be dragged into the streets to be stoned by the laws of the Old Testament. I believe that we actually have to be honest and we have to start calling it for what it is. It's destructive and it is antithetical to enlightenment. And I get into that right here.
Okay. Furthermore, this example will support an assertion in Section 2 of the National Secular Church. And in Section 2 is where I actually lay out my argument. And I've actually got an article. It's a mini book regarding how the government has created this National Secular Church that is now enforcing the secular godlessness and basically creating this vacuum for Satan to come in and occupy the religious doctrine of our government and of America. Back to the book. Sexual deviance is the antithesis of human survival and the propagation of the human race. Historically, deviant sexual practices such as homosexuality begin to rear its head as a tolerated amusement during times of opulence. Within the paradigm that is shared by most historians, the family is the building block for society. In context to the term, quote, family, close quote, a family refers to the genetic background of one person's father and mother and their heritage. Historians discuss religions and societies who embraced all forms of debauchery, rejecting the family and property and all of which are extinct as far as these societies. All of these societies that went down this path of rejecting the family and property, this communism, that the state was in control, every single time that Mises talks about it. I'm actually going to quote him right here. Mises actually points out that there were several different societies that either had, you know, the woman as the head of the figure or, you know, homosexuality and so forth. And he points out that every single one of these things that deviated from the laws of nature, nature's God, and he himself was agnostic. He wasn't atheist, but he was agnostic. And he himself, in his book, he actually points out that the reason why these things went extinct is because they were not rooted on the laws of nature, nature's God. And he also says that the reason why he moved to America is because America, at that point in time of his life, which was the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, was the only place that had the embodiment of nature's law and God's law was, or the laws of nature and nature's God, was America. He says, you know, it may be a Christian nation, but it is a nation that embodies individual liberty and individual sovereignty. So going on, the key words, back to my book, the key word is extinct, which is precisely how Mises referred to this perverted ideologies. As a society, by the way, the book you want to read is his Treatise on Socialism. It's a good thick book, but it is a historical view of not just, you know, socialism itself, but historical view of societies and so forth. And he goes into some details of societies that we've never learned. It's amazing how we have just thrown out, you know, all sorts of records of real history because we've allowed them to encapsulate some editorial view of history, like J.M. Roberts. J.M. Roberts goes through a lot of history, but he does not give you all of the details in this book it's kind of thick. But that's just the tip of the iceberg from the volumes and volumes and volumes that have been written. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We'll finish this up when we come back. I'm Reclaiming the Republic. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue.
Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.